Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter, at Davis Maddock. I am joined by Colin Drew. Sorry, you don't get a repeat of Here's the Thing with Davis Maddock and Michael Leone. If you guys want to hear Leone and I, we are about to record Uncertain Futures, and that will be, that's both a live stream and will be on this feed as well. But we are here to talk about the two-game NFL DFS slate with the conference championships, and you all are being so blessed. You are going to get Colin Drew podcast takes on the showdowns for Saturday and for Sunday. If I can voice a complaint, Colin.
Well, both games Sunday this week, right? We got Sunday.
They're both Sunday.
The 3-6 schedule.
Well, that's a bummer. I guess I just assumed that Green Bay San Francisco was on Saturday, but I mean, I don't understand why they couldn't make the Kansas City game on Saturday so that I could go. It feels it's like kind of a bummer to me.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too. It would have been nice to set up like the 6 o'clock hour on Sunday and then roll something either like 4 or prime time on Saturday would have been the way to do it.
So, two game slate. I believe there's edge here. I think that the two game slate is beatable. I think that there are some pretty clear mistakes that people are going to make. You don't think that there is as much edge as I do?
Not quite as much. I guess I'm open to considering it. I just think when you think about the elements of that create an edge, like part of it's player selection. So can you choose better players than your opponents? And there's less players to choose from, so there are less mistakes to be made. It doesn't mean people can't make mistakes. And then part of it would be correlations and things like that too. And I think you almost naturally, even if you don't run an optimizer with correlation rules, you almost naturally get a ton of correlation and game correlation within those lineups anyways. So I'm not dismissing it entirely, but I do think that like, I don't usually feel like my edge comes from player selection. I feel like it's more from correlation and trying to identify leverage spots. And I feel like some of that stuff is taken away a little bit by the smaller slates.
Well, how does this leverage spot strike you? Last week, Damian Williams on the two-gamer, not the four-gamer, on the two-gamer was like only around like 50 to 55% owned. Damian Williams was not 100% owned on the two-gamer last week and was under 50% on the four-gamer last week. I mean, if Damian Williams is under 70% owned, there's leverage just based off of that this week, I think.
Yeah, and I think he'll definitely be more owned this week than he was last week. There's kind of two segments of people that are still playing this late in the season. But you're pretty hardcore into football, at least, if you're still going to be firing. And so I think there's a big population of people that will look at the workload that Damian got last week. Going into last week, I know our projection side is pretty clear that he was going to be the lead back for Kansas City in a great spot. But I think there were at least lingering questions in certain segments of the population as to whether or not LeSean McCoy was being rested for the playoffs. Turns out he was not.
And then turns out 32-year-old running backs are 32-year-old running backs. Who knew?
Yeah, and then I think some speculation on like Darwin Thompson, whether or not he'd be used in a different fashion. And
he played a little bit. He just didn't get a touch, I believe. But I remember watching and just like laughing at him being in there over McCoy a couple times. Like I just saw that 34 and I was just like, this is so funny.
Yeah, I think when all was said and done, I mean, I think Damian played like 95% of the snaps.
Yeah, he was out there the whole game.
The smart people who are maybe a little bit cautious and therefore didn't want to lock him last week, they'll be aware of that. And then the public kind of casual person is just trying to fire for fun and action. Like, they're going to see the game logs from last week too. So
dude, the public person firing, they can't get Derrick Henry in their lineups fast enough.
Well, that's definitely true.
and let me tell you this. I have never seen smarter people more fooled by outcomes of like two games in a row than I have.
It's like eight games in a row.
But no, I'm not talking about Henry. I'm talking about the Titans, because there are smart people that are like, oh, like I think Titans plus +7 is good here, or like wanting to bet on the Titans money line. And I just, like, as someone who's like, certainly I'm not a football genius or anything, but like, just if you look at the two teams, I guess because the Titans beat the Chiefs in the regular season, people are thinking that this is going to be close. But I mean, how do you look at the Chiefs scoring 51 points, and the stat is true now that they've been over 26 points in all but one start of Mahomes' career. I don't know how people are thinking that this is going to be a good Derrick Henry game. I mean, maybe do we finally get the check down Derrick Henry game, Drewby, where he gets like 8 checkdowns?
I mean, I think it'll be like a good Derrick Henry game, right? He's going to get 30 carries regardless. and then he's got the jump pass equity too.
I have never been so more accepting of a defeat in my life than the Derrick Henry jump pass. Like, when Derrick Henry threw that pass to Corey Davis, it was just one of those moments where, even if you're betting on Baltimore, even if you're fading Henry, how could you possibly be mad at that play? Like, it just was too cool.
Yeah, it was too funny the way that it happened too. And yeah, I feel like it is crazy to think that Kansas City shouldn't be a big favorite to me. Obviously, no, we've talked on the podcast throughout the year that we felt like New England's defensive performance was like unsustainable the way they started the season. The offense had tons of holes. And so New England losing at home was still surprising in the first round of the playoffs, but it wasn't shocking. I think the Baltimore result was shocking, but if you peel back the kind of box scores, I mean, Baltimore outgained them so substantially, and it was, you know, the two missed fourth down conversions and then the three turnovers.
I mean, really, what about I think the whole game flipped on the Mark Andrews drop turning into an interception. Like, if Mark Andrews not even catches it, but if he just drops that in like the normal Mark Andrews way, which is just, it hits his chest and then falls right to the ground, I think Baltimore probably wins that game still.
Yeah. And then that like 5-minute start to start the second half. That was crazy though. Crazy football games between that. I think, you know, you look at the running backs on the two game slate, and you've got Damian, you've got Derrick Henry, and then you've got Aaron Jones. And I think there's going to be a lot of question marks as far as San Francisco. People aren't going to be really comfortable clicking in the 49ers running backs after what happened last week. And then there's still some lingering concerns with Aaron Jones. So I do think it sets up a week where
big price hike for Tevin Coleman as well. Really, like, our boy Anthony Amico, he tweeted this, and I had to look it up because I thought it was a lie. Last week's game was the most carries Tevin Coleman has ever had in a game before. How absurd is that? Like, how 49ers, how Shanahan is that to literally give Tevin Coleman the most carries he's ever had in a game that Raheem Mostert started?
I guess it was the hot hand.
I mean, I guess what happened was, and this came out afterward, was that Mostert was sick all week and no one reported it. He had like a flu, right?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's some of that. All of that, though, is going to keep people, you know, off of the San Francisco guys. I think for me, the Henry stuff, like, our projections have definitely been low on Henry relative to his performance for, you know, the last 6 to 8 weeks as well. For me, it wasn't less about, like, the argument about median projections, but a lot of people out there, including Cardi, were making it seem like there was, like, no plausible path to Henry having the ceiling game against Baltimore. And like, when you're going to get 25 or 30 touches and you're going to be low owned because everybody is using projections these days, I think there was a very clear argument to be made that Henry was still a good tournament play off of leverage. And that's what ended up coming through for, you know, the second or third straight week. I'm not sure the ownership will be as low. It does feel like between the slate size and the running back options that he's probably got to get owned to a similar degree as Aaron Jones and Damian this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is probably fair. I think there is some edge at wide receiver as well. Mecole Hardman, he almost had a touchdown last week. And I continue to believe that there is like that he just is going to be underowned. Our projections don't really like him. Our projections don't really like DeMarcus Robinson either. And I mean, he was targeted, I think, 6 times in that game. He just dropped all of his targets. And you know who the public hates, Drewby? You know who the public, they loathe? Sammy Watkins. Nobody wants to play Sammy Watkins. And that, I mean, to me, I think that's the edge this week, is the Chiefs' secondary wide receivers.
So Sammy was pretty owned last week on the 4-gamer, and he was pretty owned on the 2-gamer as well. His price didn't come up very much at 4,600. I tend to think that Manny Sanders might get owned a little bit more, but probably comparable level to Watkins. Last week he was kind of in this like vacuum. But I think Watkins will be heavier owned than Corey Davis, Tajay Sharp, Kendrick Bourne. So I feel like he's not going to be like, he's going to be 30-35% at minimum, I would think.
Yeah. Just Corey Davis. Like, what do you do? What do you do with Corey? It catches the touchdown last week. I believe that was his only reception of the game. This might be a game where the Titans are finally forced to utilize the forward pass.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that was interesting. As I was trying to unpack like potential edges going into the 4-gamer last week and then the 2-gamer, one of the things that I felt like was plausible, and Mike Leone had done a really good simulation article up on Daily Roto last week before the 4-gamer, but I think that Tannehill might be over-owned as far as double stacks this week. And I do think like a plausible angle to stack Tannehill would be a single stack. And the main hope there is you're just getting a touchdown. You're getting cheap pieces in there that put up like a okay level of fantasy points at low ownership. And then it basically like frees up the salary for everything else. I think there'll be, you know, every quarterback will be owned to different degrees. Some people will own Tannehill, but I have a feeling that with the way people are building lineups these days, that the double stack might be a little bit over-owned.
I am in all my entries, I'm playing Patrick Mahomes. I'm not playing Jimmy G. I'm not playing Aaron Rodgers. I'm not playing Ryan Tannehill. I will exclusively be playing Patrick Mahomes. And I assume that's going to be the chalkiest route to go. He's the most expensive quarterback, but I assume he will also be the most owned. But that is, last week I played 90% of my lineups were Mahomes or Lamar. I just like the odds of Mahomes outscoring every other quarterback by 10, like the other three quarterbacks are like, I think pretty equitable.
Yeah. That's definitely true. I think the only question is whether or not you're going to find like a,
there's no leverage in that decision. There's no leverage in that decision. I would say.
So if Mahomes puts up 30 and one of these other guys puts up 20,
yeah.
Like, is that salary savings going to be enough that you're making it up with other spots in the roster? Because Mahomes is going to force you to punt. It
depends. So that would be big time depending on what Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, Blake Bell, what those guys do versus what Kendrick Bourne, Allen Lazard, Geronimo Allison, Tajay Sharp. Like, it's going to big time depend on what those guys do, I would imagine.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think to an extent, some people might like look at 4 targets for Hardman Robinson and see that as like a positive sign. But just because of the way that game worked out, they were forced to throw the ball a lot more aggressively to start. So I know it's still like 10-11%, but I don't know. Yeah, I think Mahomes, one of the questions I would have would be if you're going to want, like, I almost feel like on a slate this size, you almost want to like force a triple stack with him.
Yeah, I mean, just rocking, you know, like I played on the 2-gamer last week. I played like, I think like 13% Blake Bell. I'm running it back this week. I would say if all you care about is having like unique lineups, if you want to make the best possible game theory decisions and you're not worried about individual player projections, I would imagine that Green Bay stacks are the most game theory optimal stacks to use this week.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Just cause like Adams will be so owned, I guess the other kind of ancillary pieces of Green Bay are the pieces that are pretty interesting to the slate. Last week, one of my Galaxy brain lineups was to play Lamar with Kelce and Tyreek Hill and just hope that that Lamar could outscore Mahomes. And I was feeling like brilliant for a little while. And then Mahomes just went absolutely nuclear and ended up being a requirement for the winning lineups. this week, I feel like the cheap pieces, I guess strategically, there's cheap pieces that can provide individual leverage if they have big games. And then you're also trying to avoid duplicates a little bit more aggressively on the two game slate than you are like on a four gamer. And yeah. I think you should be conscious either about the total projected ownership of your roster or about leaving salary on the table just in case you do happen to get lucky. At least you can chop it up with a few fewer people.
You got to play these egregious tight ends. You got to be playing Firkser. You got to be playing Michael Pruitt, Blake Bell, Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tanyan. I really think that is the key to getting like good weird lineups this week.
Yeah, well, we did see that like on a four gamer, on a two gamer, like a single catch for a touchdown can make a cheap punt like the optimal play. Like that.
Yeah.
They don't have to have a good game.
Yeah, I mean, like literally just having points, like, and I mean, Blake Bell, yeah. he beat George Kittle, bro. God, last weekend, I mean, I'm definitely coming to this with a little bit of irrational overconfidence because my teams were so good relative to the field last week. Like, so I certainly am not approaching this like normal, where I'm like, man, I don't really know what happens. It's the overconfidence of someone who just had a good week.
Yeah,
which like we almost
had huge weeks, like. Last Sunday was one of the more tilting things I've seen. I just felt super live going into that last game on the four game slate. I was like up six figures. And then that game went off, not in a terribly unexpected manner, but it was just enough to totally punish me. And then
I just needed Tyler Lockett to only get like 20 instead of like 30. That's really all I needed. And it just didn't quite happen. Or if Sammy would have gotten the 100-yard bonus, I think that would have been good enough.
Yeah, and then on that showdown slate, I had a bunch of lineups live. We only had like ten of the best like 12 iterations of lineups, and then the lineup that ended up
the winning, train.
He chopped it with a 150 person train that was either the DR optimal or the second
Optimal. It was the second vanilla DR optimal with no adjustments or rules or anything.
So sick.
I mean, that's just the dude, just put the optimum 150 times in print. I don't know why people don't do that more.
That's amazing. It was pretty amazing. Yeah.
So I mean that like just like to synthesize what I plan on doing for the two gamer, Mahomes double stacks, and then just trying to get weird with MBS, Jake Kumerow, Khalif Raymond, Allison Hardman, and then the cheap tight ends, and then I'll probably lock Damien, but like there's not really a difference between 90% and 100%.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. I'm going to be under the field on Derrick Henry. And in fact, you know what? I might as well just not play him. Like at this point, what is even the use in playing him? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the use?
Do you think on, since you're going to lock Mahomes, are you going to force bringbacks or are you just going to let it happen naturally?
No, I'm sure in my first run, I got 60% Tajay Sharpe. So it's like, you know, whatever happens, it happens, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
I reserve the right, if you guys go look up my freaking CSV on Sunday, if I have a little bit of Aaron Rodgers in there, I reserve the right to change my mind. But that is my plan right now is just to go all in on Mahomes and the Chiefs offense. But Drew B, people are not here to listen to, you know, how much I think Patrick Mahomes and Damian Williams are good plays. They want to talk about showdown. They want to hear your thoughts on the Tennessee versus Kansas City showdown.
Yeah, let's get into it. The Titans have been one of the more frustrating teams to figure out for me in showdowns, not as much to do with Henry, because he's always going to – like guys like him, I have like 50 or 55% of them in my lineups and probably like 15% at captain. And so it's not so much about that, but it's about like the cheap ancillary pieces. And one of the biggest hurdles to try to wrap your brain around, I think this week I think 5-1 onslaughts are going to be extremely popular for Kansas City.
Super popular.
Especially because the low volume of passing plays that Tennessee has ran recently. And so usually I just kind of let things fly and see where it shakes out. But I think trying to figure out the kind of ancillary pieces for Tennessee is going to be pretty important if you're entering like a single entry or 20 max. I think 5-1 is probably optimal, but 4-2 might actually have like a little bit more leverage on the field. And there's going to be very few people who are playing more than two tight ends in their lineups. Not that I think you should necessarily do that, but you could potentially build like for a game script where Tennessee is able to run the ball effectively. Henry is able to dominate. They control the clock. And then you get like two or maybe three pieces in there.
What if I just want to run 300-5-1 Chiefs stacks? I won't do it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I like, at this point, the Tennessee Titans have cost me so much money over the last 2 weeks of the NFL season that like I don't have it in me to start buying Titans stock now. I think the thing that you do in this slate is you take advantage of the fact that some of the Titans guys are still cheap. You know, Corey Davis, Tajay Sharp, still pretty cheap. You know, they use Michael Pruitt, Anthony Firkser, both of them are under 1,000 and both are projected for, you know, like 4 PPR points. So I think you kind of just let those guys ride. And I can see an argument for not making a ton of rules in this slate, actually, for this being a slate that just doesn't require a ton of rules overall, other than the correlations with the pass catchers.
Yeah, and talking like about those for people who aren't familiar, I think one of the kind of main strategies that we would try to use is if we're playing a pass catcher at the captain position, wanting to force in the quarterback there. I think that's generally optimal. I do want to shout out last week, Circle the Dragon Josh on Twitter had kind of quasi-galaxy brain. It was a Devontae Adams captain team that took it down, but instead of running it back with Aaron Rodgers, he ran it back with Russ, who outscored Rodgers. I think that was pretty sharp, just because the pricing was tough that, you know, and it was plausible that Rodgers had like a big game, but Russ was able to outscore him.
And 80% of Aaron Rodgers' passes went to Devontae Adams, which meant that Adams could get like 30 and Rodgers could get like 18, which is what happened.
Yeah, and then Russ has just a little bit of a bigger game, and it's enough that you can't fit all three guys in there because there weren't good cheap pieces. That one of the things I'm struggling with on the Kansas City slate, I guess specifically, is just the price on Mahomes is so expensive that if you do force the stack on any of the pass catchers, you're either going to depress the ownership that you have on like Tyreek Hill, on Travis Kelce, or you're going to get a lot more pieces from the Tennessee side of things. And so I guess it's pretty interesting, but I do see a scenario where you end up with like a cheat if Kansas City dominates the game, they win, but no individual player substantially outscores the other. I do see a scenario where like a really cheap captain ends up on the optimal
Kansas, this would really be a slate where cheap captain being optimal could really make sense because there are so many expensive players who can get 20 plus. So like if you're just looking at it, if I told you that Mahomes, Henry, Kelce, and Damian all got 20 or more, you're like sure that's them all, that's like a parlay of them all beating their projections, but that's like greater than a 10th percentile outcome probably.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest, the first run I did with kind of my normal, no super in-depth rule setup, but kind of the normal setup as far as my settings and shuffle and volatility, I ended up with 33% Anthony Firkser and 26% Mecole Pruitt. And that's wild.
I had 27% on the last slate.
It's gross. Like in the last slate, well, sometimes you see this stuff. The last slate I saw it was Blake Bell, and I was getting 40% Blake Bell in the DR.
Yeah,
optimal runs.
But you're a fish, and you don't know about the Belldozer, so you use the negative boost.
I did, man. I knew he had like multi-point upside, but I didn't want 40% of my lineups to be tied to a potential zero. And it's kind of shaping up that same way with this Tennessee situation, where like the lack of good plays on the Tennessee side and the pricing of the Chiefs makes it so I legitimately think that one catch from either Firkser or Pruitt could be enough for them to land on the optimal lineup in MME.
Dude, they were running scripted plays for Michael Pruitt last week. Like Michael Pruitt got their first reception of the game on like a very clear, like they wanted to run play action right away to get the Ravens thinking about it. The whole play was designed to him. Like they like use these guys. Like I think that Firkser and Pruitt are way underpriced relative. Like, they should be the same prices as Hayden Hurst and Nick Boyle, basically. And they're not.
Yeah, and I think if you're hand-building lineups or if you're using the Daily Road Optimizer, I think that the pricing on these punts is pretty important on this slate, and it's something where you shouldn't shy away from them in your player pool. They're probably not good enough to be at the captain spot just because you need like a legitimate ceiling there. But the salary that they free up ends up being important, and people who are hand-building lineups are usually going to pass up on players like that. I don't remember Bell's ownership last week, but I think it was like 10%, something like that, right?
Yeah, it was. It was like it certainly was not super high. All right, Green Bay, San Francisco. What are you thinking with the running backs? Like, what are we doing with Tevin? What are we doing with Mostert? What are we doing with Breida, with Juszczyk? What are we doing with these guys?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty TTP, like, trust the projections as far as what, like, the point projections and totals there. I do think one of the things I want to set up, and it's an area that I've improved kind of over the last like 18 months, but I used to be a guy who kind of just X'd out more than one RB from the same team in lineups. And I do think that it's plausible that two San Francisco.
Yeah. Correlated key boosts isn't instead.
Yeah. And if in the optimizer, we do have a feature that lets you do correlated key boosts. So you can key, like, if Raheem Mostert's your captain, you can, instead of excluding Tevin Coleman, you can negative boost. And I think the right way to do things on this slate against the Packers, especially since San Francisco is such a big favorite, is to kind of let them fly as they are in the flex position. But if you end up using either Mostert or Coleman at captain, that means that they've probably taken like a lion's share of either the carries, targets, or the red zone touches and scored touchdowns. So I think I'm going to set up correlated key boosts for Mostert and Coleman when they're the captain, but kind of let the projections fly as is in the flex position.
I think that makes sense. Also, another thing that that you have going on with the 49ers is the like seemingly random rotation between Bourne and Richie James. So I just make a max one of those two guys. Even though Richie James is really cheap, I guess this is the first time Richie James has been 200. So maybe I won't on this slate, but I had been making it max one Kendrick Bourne, Richie James in the past.
Yeah, I usually do that too when it's a situation like that. The other thing I'll do, I guess on the San Francisco side, I feel like it's a clear enough gap between those guys that I'll do a max one rule. And I might not like throttle up the volatility. If it's a situation where we basically have to project, like you have to put projections in, but a lot of times there's tons of risk associated with the projections. And so we might have three guys that are projected for like 30% of the wide receiver snaps, but realistically one guy is going to get 50 and the other two guys are going to get like 20 and 10. And a lot of times what I would like to do in those situations is to throttle up the volatility on the guys that are punts. So I end up kind of overweight the field on each of the kind of punt guys, but I don't have any lineups that play them together. And I think it's a pretty interesting scenario on the Packers side of the ball to use that, because obviously so many of Rodgers' targets and so much of ownership is going to go to Adams, but beyond Adams, you do have kind of this split where Mercedes Lewis, Jake Kumerow, Jay Sternberger, Robert Tonyan, Alan Lazard, Geronimo Allison, they're all going to play like 30% or more of the snaps.
Yeah, but I just call those the scrub rules. And it's mm-hmm. like, it's very, it's just, you make max one Allison, MVS, Kumerow, Lewis, Tonyan, and then you just hope that you get enough of the guy that's actually scores point. Cause one of those guys will have four catches for 40 yards or whatever, like one or catch a touchdown. Like odds suggest that one of those guys is going to have a good game. You just aren't going to want to compound like you're just not going to want to compound those in the same lineup basically.
Yeah, totally agree with that. The other thing I think is really interesting. It doesn't seem likely that the Kansas City game just tanks, as in like Kansas City's offense can't get anything going. It turns into a game that goes like 14 points under the total. It seems like that's pretty unlikely to happen, but it wouldn't shock me if that happened in this Packers game. If the 49ers,
yeah, both teams. Yeah.
If like the 49ers play well defensively, San Francisco runs the ball a lot, but Jimmy G lays an egg. So I think there's some interesting things that could potentially happen that would be extremely low owned by the field, would provide a lot of differentiation for lineups. So I could see a scenario where like Davante Adams was the captain, Rodgers wasn't on that team, and Jimmy G wasn't on that team either, because nobody is able to generate a lot of offense. All the Packers offense goes to Adams, the 49ers gets distributed. And then, so I do think there's some interesting scenarios there that would be really low owned by the field. So I think my plan for Adams is to run like 100 lineups, forcing him in with Rodgers, and then to run 50 where that rule isn't on. And it just, you know, perhaps I get some naked Davante Adams.
I think another pretty interesting thing is Tyler Irvin played more than Jamal Williams last week. Seems like Jamal Williams still has like a shoulder injury or something that's limiting how much he can play. And Tyler Irvin is also a kick returner, and he is only 600. So I think If you're going to play Jamal Williams at all, max one, Tyler Irvin, Jamal Williams is a pretty good rule.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense too. As far as like use check, I probably won't use him at all. Breda, I guess Breda's price is cheap enough that potentially I'd consider.
Oh, I will use check. They call plays for him. Like he'll randomly get like four target games. I'll just include him in that like Richie James rule where it's like you can't have more than one of these guys whose upside is five touches. Basically, yeah. like Levine Toilolo or whatever, but like if the opto gives me like 3% of him, I'm not gonna nuke him.
I think that makes sense. And then I guess the last thing is, I think the ownership on the quarterbacks might end up inflated, and that's
it's gonna get absurd because the skill position players all have questions other than Adams.
And that's something I wrestle with on most slates is whether or not to X the quarterbacks out of the captain position. And I think it feels like a slate where I might end up doing that just because usually quarterbacks get slightly overowned. And so if you want to pick up some leverage on the field, one way you can do it is build more through wide receiver captains. And I think like the name value of Rodgers will bring kind of more captain ownership on him than realistically I would expect, given the fact that they don't have a lot of weapons. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that another, if you wanted to captain Rodgers and still have leverage, I think probably the way I would do that would make Min two pass catchers with him in the captain instead of one. And just say like, if I am committed to using Rodgers in the captain, I think that means he has like an actual nuclear game where Kumerow or Allison or Lazard or whoever it is also has, you know, more than 15 PPR points.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I would actually do that same role with Jimmy G for this slate too. If you are going to play Jimmy G at captain, I'd want two plus pass catchers with him too.
This slate is like, I don't really want to play it in Showdown. It's what it sounds like to me. It sounds brutal thus far.
I feel like this slate actually sounds better than the Kansas City, Tennessee slate, to be honest.
That's because you don't believe in the Belldozer or Michael Pruitt. You just don't have the ability to go all in on these super thin plays.
It is going to be fun. I'm going to be at a bachelor party this weekend, and so if Michael Pruitt gets like a catch or Firkser gets a catch and I'm
doing, you're going to be windmilling.
Yeah, exactly. And people are going to be like, what is wrong with this kid?
Yeah. All right, everyone. That is the two game showdown podcast. I'm sorry you guys didn't get Here's the Thing with me and Mike Leone. Instead, you got actual good daily fantasy advice from Colin Drew. So hope that was useful. Hope that was helpful. And we will be back a little bit later on with Uncertain Futures.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.